the headlines. Supporters of Iraqi Shia cleric Muqtada Sadr storm Baghdad's heavily fortified Green Zone and occupy parliament in a deepening political crisis. The Russian energy giant Gazprom suspends its gas supplies to Latvia days after slashing deliveries to Germany amid tensions with the West over the war in Ukraine. And the World Health Organization says it expects monkeypox-related deaths to increase as it calls for international efforts to contain the disease that now has spread to 78 countries. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Iraqi protesters stormed parliament in the capital's high-security green zone for the second time in a week amid political deadlock over the formation of a new government. The demonstrators, mostly supporters of cleric Muqtada Sadr, occupied the legislative body in the zone, which is home to various government and diplomatic buildings. Dozens of people have been injured amid clashes with security forces. Prime Minister Mustafa al-Kadhimi has called on security officers to guarantee the safety of state institutions. Sadr's supporters also breached Iraq's parliament building on Wednesday. The demonstrators are opposed to the nomination of former minister Mohammad Shia al-Sudani to replace Kadhimi. The bloc, led by Sadr, won most seats in the October 2021 parliamentary elections. Last month, the cleric, however, asked all of his MPs to resign after he failed to reach the two-thirds majority needed to pick a president to form a government. Moving on to the war in Ukraine, Kiev says that Russia has launched fresh strikes on a number of towns and cities across Ukraine. Ukrainian authorities say that two residential districts were targeted with rockets in the southern city of Mykolaiv. The mayor says one person was killed and six others injured in the overnight attack. In the northeast, a school in Ukraine's second largest city of Kharkiv was reportedly hit by S-300 missiles early on Saturday. Local authorities say that the attack caused material damage, but no casualties. The governor of the eastern region of Donetsk says that the city of Slovyansk came under Russian shelling also. Meanwhile, the Ukrainian presidency said its forces had carried out strikes on Russian military warehouses and positions in the southern region of Kherson. The region, which borders Moscow-annexed Crimea, fell to Russian forces only days after Russia launched its cold operation in Ukraine on February 24. Russia's energy giant Gazprom has suspended gas supplies to Latvia amid tensions with the West over the Ukraine war. Gazprom has cited violations of the conditions of purchases as the reason for the cutoff. On Friday, Latvia said it will pay in euros rather than rubles when trading with Gazprom. The Russian company on Wednesday drastically cut gas deliveries to Germany via the Nord Stream pipeline to about 20% of its capacity. Tensions are running high between Russia and other European countries over the Ukraine war. They've imposed sanctions on Russia, targeting its economy. Moscow has labeled these countries as unfriendly states, saying that they should buy Russian gas in rubles. Official data shows that the U.S. economy shrank for two quarters in a row. That signals the unofficial start of a recession there, an issue that's denied by U.S. President Joe Biden and White House officials. They cite positive facts, including a low unemployment rate. But that alone is not enough to push economic growth. The Federal Reserve has already raised interest rates four times this year to control inflation, which is at a 40-year high.
The U.S. economy has entered a recession. Based on the official definition of a recession, when the economy contracts for two consecutive quarters, that is the definition of a recession. Recession fears for the U.S. have been ongoing for some time. One of the factors which speeded up the decline of the economy was energy prices, which have affected the prices of goods, from food to basic stuff, leading to inflation. The U.S. is experiencing over 9% inflation, something it has not experienced in over four decades.
The American economy is being bashed from pillar to post right now by a whole range of factors, but certainly it's going into recession because there's severe headwinds being caused by, first of all, the government cutting back on its spending in a ridiculous attempt to balance its budget, which it should not be trying to do in the first place, and then high interest rates compared to what they have been in the recent past, even though they're below the rate of inflation, meaning that households are no longer borrowing, and in fact, they're probably paying their level of debt down.
The U.S. president has been trying to portray this as a temporary phase, which the U.S. economy will overcome.
We're not going to be in a recession, in my view. The employment rate is still one of the lowest we've had in history. It's in the 3.6 area. We still find ourselves with people investing. My hope is we go from this rapid growth to steady growth.
But as things are going, especially the war in Ukraine, this is anything but temporary. The mayor of New York has painted an even bleaker picture. He has said that we are in a financial crisis like you can never imagine. Wall Street is collapsing. We are in a recession.
President Biden has said the U.S. has avoided a recession, citing steady spending and measures to rein in inflation. But that sounds like a broken record. Inflation is not tamed. Prices at the pump are lower only because the U.S. had to release more oil out of its emergency reserves. And in a sense, it's quite hypocritical to say that spending is steady, as the U.S. public debt is standing at over $30 trillion.
The poor state of the U.S. economy is typical to many economies around the world, especially the ones in Europe. One of the telltale signs is the price of energy, which has affected Europe so badly that economies in countries like Germany, the UK, France, and Italy are all experiencing GDP contractions or slow economic growth. The Ukraine conflict is definitely one factor weighing down on the economies, but it would be wrong to blame the negative economic performance just on the war itself.
No, I don't think the government's done a good job, because all last year this began and they did nothing because they thought it was temporary. And, you know, during the pandemic, everybody got passed out money, including stores and all of that. And so it's like too much money floating around. They were very late to the game. And I don't think the administration's really put it as a very high priority.
Consumers are being bashed by inflation running about 5% per year higher than wage rises. Now, in that situation, consumers are likely to be trying to do everything they can not to spend.
The U.S., similar to Germany, is carrying a deficit. That is when companies import more and export less, dynamic that weighs down on the GDP. Yet the future looks bleak. As economies are still facing the COVID pandemic, with supply chains not fully recovered, the U.S. is pursuing an aggressive policy towards China, which involves a trade war. Europe is bound to follow the U.S. lead, which can only make matters worse for their economies.
Happening now, thousands of train drivers across Britain's railway network are walking off their jobs in protest against low wages amid soaring inflation in the United Kingdom. Roughly 5,000 drivers took part in the 24-hour strike. Nearly all services on Britain's 34 train operators were cancelled. Cancellations also took place in regional networks. The drivers are demanding higher pay. They say that the current salaries do not meet the country's rising cost of living. The strike is the second major industrial action this week, after 40,000 other railway workers held a massive strike on Wednesday. Britons are dealing with skyrocketing living costs. Inflation has gone past the 9% mark, the highest rate in four decades. Sectors other than railway have also been hit. That includes postal services, health, schools, and airports, among others. Spain has reported a second monkeypox death only one day after Brazil announced what it is believed to be the first fatality linked to the outbreak outside of Africa. The Spanish Health Ministry reported the first death on Saturday. It said there are 120 others currently hospitalized. On Friday, Brazilian media reported the death of a 41-year-old man due to the outbreak in the state of Minas Gerais. The man reportedly had serious immune system problems and was being treated for other conditions. The World Health Organization has warned of further monkeypox-related deaths. The World Health Organization has warned of these deaths, stressing the need to interrupt transmissions across the continent.
It's a very different sort of virus from COVID-19. For one thing, it's transmitted by very, very close contact. Whereas we know COVID-19 is transmitted much more through the air, and is much more likely to happen when you've got crowding and people in closed environments with poor ventilation. So the form of transmission is quite different, but we are seeing cases, as I said, in over 78 countries to date. We're seeing a large number of cases. So that is exactly why the Director General declared a public health emergency of international concern, to get the world cooperating now to stop it turning into a pandemic. Look at what you're doing right now.
Last week, the head of the WHO called the monkeypox outbreak a global health emergency, saying the outbreak represents a public health emergency of an international scale with the highest level of alert. Monkeypox has spread for decades in parts of Central and Western Africa. It primarily spreads through close physical contact and generally causes a mild disease. However, it can be fatal and can cause serious symptoms. More than 16,000 monkeypox cases from 75 countries have been reported to the WHO this year. Currently, only COVID-19 and polio are considered as global health emergencies. Pope Francis once again condemns the decades-long abuse of Indigenous children at former church-run schools across Canada. He says the treatment those children received amounts to, quote, genocide.
I apologize. I ask forgiveness for this work, which was genocide. I condemn this, taking children away and trying to change their culture, their minds, change their traditions, race, and an entire culture. Yes, it's genocide.
He made the remarks while aboard the plane on his way back to the Vatican following a six-day trip to Canada. There he asked for forgiveness for the evil perpetrated by Catholics in residential schools across Canada, run by the Catholic Church from the late 1800s to the 1990s. Many were physically and sexually abused at the schools, and thousands are believed to have died of the disease, malnutrition, or neglect. Although Francis's unprecedented apology was mostly welcomed across Canada, many survivors said much more needed to be done for reconciliation. French President Emmanuel Macron is under fire for hosting the Saudi Crown Prince, despite his alleged role in the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi about 4 years ago. Let's see how social media reacted to the story.
Hey everyone, Ali Reza here, back with another hashtag trending. Today we're checking out how French President Emmanuel Macron has come under fire for hosting Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, under whose rule dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi was brutally murdered at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul almost 4 years ago. Rights groups say that the reception of the Crown Prince by world leaders is all the more surprising, given how many of them at the time expressed disgust and a commitment not to bring him back into the international community after the murder of Khashoggi. Social media users say that Macron is desperate to do what U.S. President Biden failed to accomplish, to persuade Saudi Arabia to produce more oil in order to address Europe's need for energy following the sanctions imposed on Russian oil and gas. Now let's take a look at our first batch of comments for the day. Sabine K tweeted, French President Emmanuel Macron is hosting Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman for talks in Paris, defying criticism that the invitation is deeply inappropriate barely 4 years after the murder by Saudi agents of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Our next tweet comes from Samuel Ramani. As Joe Biden could not convince Mohammed bin Salman to increase oil production, Emmanuel Macron is trying to step in. France and Saudi Arabia held talks about mitigating the macroeconomic impacts of the Ukraine war. Kevin Doyle tweeted, the powerful are totally corrupt. Biden, Macron, Grigoriadis in Greece are all happily shaking hands with bin Salman of Saudi Arabia, a man directly implicated in the murder, dismemberment and disappearance of writer-slash-activist Jamal Khashoggi. Several rights groups have already filed a lawsuit in Paris against the Saudi Crown Prince. The lawsuit says that France is obliged to investigate Mohammed bin Salman for complicity in torture and forced disappearance of Jamal Khashoggi. Let's take a look at this next tweet by Sarah Leah Whitson. At DonMina.org, which Khashoggi founded in 2018, and the Swiss campaign group at trial filed a joint formal complaint in Paris against MBS for complicity in torture and enforced disappearance. Over here, Jeremy Smith said, diplomacy or normalizing the slaughter of journalists for a bit of oil, proof that social and environmental justice go hand in hand. Gareth Harding has our next tweet. 4 years ago, Saudi Prince bin Salman ordered a U.S. journalist to be chopped up. Now he gets red carpet treatment in Greece and a dinner date with Macron at the Élysée. Funny how that works. Lawrence Moss said as a party to the UN conventions against torture and enforced disappearances, France is obliged to investigate Bin Salman if he is present on French territory. That is a quote by Dawn, Open Society's Justice Initiative and Trial International. People have condemned the Western double standards in dealing with Saudi Arabia, considering Riyadh's war crimes in Yemen and its appalling rights track records in general. They say that values are being obliterated in the face of concerns about the rising price of oil. Now let's take a look at our final batch of comments. Our next tweet comes from Thierry Baudet. Western values. Emmanuel Macron sanctions Russia for invading Ukraine, but is inviting Mohammed bin Salman to dinner at the Elysee Palace. Even though Saudi Arabia invaded Yemen in 2015, creating one of the worst humanitarian disasters in the world. Well, in fact, Yemen is the worst humanitarian crisis in the world right now. Nabila Ramdani said, Emmanuel Macron returned from a trip to Africa where he lectured leaders about their alleged endorsement of Putin, but here he is embracing the Saudi autocrat and treating him to dinner at Elysee. Despite Mohammed bin Salman's war crimes in Yemen and human rights abuses, which would take a while to list. And our final comments comes from Kate Palmer. She said, Western democracy's efforts to court the major oil-producing state amidst the war in Ukraine continues with MBS's visit to France. Macron is making his country the hypocrisy in action leader of the free world, as he seems to have forgotten Saudi Arabia's appalling rights track record. That's a wrap for another Hashtag Trending. As always, take care and bye-bye.
And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Research published recently warns that forever chemicals used in everyday products could lead to tens of billions of dollars in medical costs in the United States, globally infamous for its for-profit healthcare system. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Jessica Corbett, journalist. This article is published under the heading Study Ties, Forever Chemicals, Exposure to Billions in U.S. Health Costs. Stay tuned for more. Research published recently warns that forever chemicals used in everyday products could lead to tens of billions of dollars in medical costs in the United States, globally infamous for its for-profit healthcare system. The new study, published online in the journal Exposure and Health, focuses on per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, or PFAS, a class of over 4,700 manufactured chemicals that persist in the human body and environment for long periods. Because of their use in everything from firefighting foam to food packaging to furniture, the substances have been found in drinking water, soil, and people across the U.S. The researchers, led by Vladislav Obeskov of the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, calculated how many Americans were likely exposed to PFAS in 2018 using blood samples from the U.S. National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, then examined the studies from the past decade of diseases tied to the chemicals. PFAS have been connected to various health issues, including multiple types of cancer, childhood obesity, and damage to immune and reproductive systems. The study estimates the economic burden of 13 medical conditions that may result from daily PFAS exposure. Our findings add to the substantial and still mounting body of evidence suggesting that exposure to PFAS is harming our health and undermining the economy, said study co-author Linda G. Kahn, an assistant professor at New York University Langone Health, in a statement. The researchers determined that 13 conditions potentially resulting from PFAS exposure could cost Americans $5.5 billion to $63 billion over the lifetime of the current population. Among the five conditions with the strongest connections to the chemicals, the biggest contributors to the economic toll were childhood obesity, followed by hypothyroidism in women. Dr. Leonardo Trasande, another co-author and NYU Langone professor, said that our results strongly support the recent decision by the Environmental Protection Agency to lower the safe, allowable level of these substances in water. The federal agency last month took what green groups called baby steps on drinking water contamination by common PFAS, issuing four health advisories to lowering the levels for PFOA and PFOS, and two, establishing new guidance for Gen X and PFBS. Consumer Reports senior staff scientist Michael Hansen said at the time that EPA's move is a major victory for science and represents an important first step to ensure everyone has access to safe drinking water, but also called on the agency to adopt legally binding standards. Alongside the new advisories in June, EPA Administrator Michael Regan announced a new grant program to invest $1 billion to reduce PFAS and other contaminants in drinking water. Based on our estimates, the cost of eradicating contamination and replacing this class of chemical with safer alternatives is ultimately justified when considering the tremendous economic and medical risks of allowing them to persist in the environment. Trasanda said recently, adding that his research team now plans to study the long-term risks of PFAS in the U.S.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته, and welcome to IRIB English Radio. And you are listening to the program For Humanity. In this episode and the episodes that will follow, we will be looking at the tragedy of Karbala and Ashura in specific, and how we can learn from it, because Karbala is a battlefield that was designed to guarantee and save the rights of mankind. That's why Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam sacrificed his life and the life of his family and his companions for that sake. So we should give it a second look and see what we can learn from this epic battle of Karbala. Since the dawn of mankind, truth and falsehood have been engaged in an ongoing battle. When Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created Adam alayhi salam, Iblis from day one with his arrogance rebelled against Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and against the command, the divine command of Allah, and he became a curse on mankind from that day. So since Adam alayhi salam set foot in the realm of this earth thousands of years ago, the confrontation between truth and falsehood have been transpired, sometimes manifesting itself through the battle of ideology and sometimes through a physical battle between good and evil. Ultimately, obviously, truth would always win over evil and falsehood. The plains of Karbala witness a monument conflict between truth and falsehood that has become a sign, that had become something that we cannot miss when we look into the history of the Muslims, to be specific. It's a turning point in the history of Islam. The souls of those who gave their lives for the sake of truth, for the sake of justice, for the sake of freedom, led by the master of the youth of paradise, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, he himself has become a beacon of truth for generations that passed and for generations that will come and will remain until the day of judgment. At the same time, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, his adversary Yazid, has become synonymous with falsehood. The massacre of Karbala resulted from the worldly ambitions of Yazid and the treachery of the Kufan people, who sent many letters and invitations to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Then they created a sense of, if we can call it a treason, or they betrayed Imam Hussein alayhi salam, even though they are the ones who invited him. This incident saw the merciless massacre of many members of the Prophet's family and their supporters at the hands of Yazid's forces. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala curse them all. Now, we have to look at these sacrifices of the noble souls and see what they stood for and what were they trying to achieve, because such a thing, such a battle like Karbala should not be gone unnoticed and without us having to see what we can learn from it. Now, before we continue, let us take a short break and then we will come back, inshallah.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was a figure for humanity itself. Now, one of the messages of Karbala in terms of human rights, Imam al-Hussein taught us that one must never be hesitant in serving Islam, because Islam itself is a message for humanity. Islam itself is a constitution that guarantees and saves people's rights. Without Islam, then this world would be chaos. Moral values would drop, and people will become, as we say, it will become a dog-eat-dog world. Whether Islam itself, it preserved that right for people to have their rights intact. Now, if Islam goes, everything else will go. So Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he fought first and foremost for Islam itself as a system, as a religion that saves and guarantees the lives and the human rights of people. Whether the opportunity arises or not, we must take a stand for Islam and support its growth in every way possible, even if it means we have to give our own lives for it. The second message that we can learn from the movement of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and the Battle of Karbala is that we must have Islam and faith as a priority to everything else in life. Sacrificing our lives in the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala must be a practice that we are willing to pay for the elevation and preservation of Islam. In fact, it is a privilege to be a firm wall between truth and falsehood in the face of every desire and difficulty. Like I keep saying, that without Islam, then we have nothing. So to preserve it, obviously there's a cost that needs to be paid. Sometimes the cost is easy, sometimes it's a matter of using words, delivering lectures and speeches and preaching. Sometimes it costs money, and sometimes it costs life. Whatever the cost might be, we need to give it for the sake of Islam, because in maintaining Islam and the growth of Islam, we are keeping the human rights going and moving forward. Another message we learn from Imam Hussein alayhi salam, if a person is surrounded by darkness of calamities, hardship, and difficulties during his short life, they must not become heedless of the divine laws. Rather, they should dispel this darkness through the lamp of the Islamic laws, or what's referred to as Sharia. So this is something that we face as human beings in our daily life. There are times, there are moments where we are surrounded by this darkness and difficulties. No human life is spared from this test of life, this test of hardship. Therefore, we need to fight through it, just like Imam al-Hussein alayhi as-salam did. Inshallah, we will continue this series talking about human rights and Karbala in episodes to come. So until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. 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 Salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
Former US President Donald Trump hasn't been interviewed on Rupert Murdoch's Fox News for more than 100 days, and other Republicans often get the attention that Donald Trump once received. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Jeremy Peters. The piece is titled Fox News, Once Home to Trump, Now Often Ignores Him. It has been more than 100 days since Donald Trump was interviewed on Fox News. The network, which is owned by Rupert Murdoch and boosted Mr. Trump's ascension from real estate developer and reality television star to the White House, is now often bypassing him in favor of showcasing other Republicans. In the former president's view, according to two people who have spoken to him recently, Fox News's ignoring him is an affront far worse than running stories and commentary that he has complained are too negative. The network is effectively displacing him from his favorite spot, the center of the news cycle. On 22nd of July, as Donald Trump was rallying supporters in Arizona and teasing the possibility of running for president in 2024, saying, "We may have to do it again," Fox News chose not to show the event. The same approach it has taken for nearly all of his rallies this year. Instead, the network aired Laura Ingraham's interview with a possible rival for the 2024 Republican nomination, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida. It was the first of two primetime interviews that Fox News Channel aired with Ron DeSantis in the span of 5 days. He appeared on Tucker Carlson's show shortly after talking to Laura Ingraham. When Donald Trump spoke to a gathering of conservatives in Washington this week, Fox News did not air the speech. It instead showed a few clips after he was done speaking. That same day, it did broadcast live, for 17 minutes, a speech by former Vice President Mike Pence. Donald Trump has complained recently to aides that even Sean Hannity, his friend of 20 years, doesn't seem to be paying him much attention anymore, one person who spoke to him recalled. The snubs are not coincidental, according to several people close to Rupert Murdoch's Fox Corporation, who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss the company's operations. This month, the New York Post and the Wall Street Journal, both of them owned by Rupert Murdoch, published blistering editorials about Donald Trump's actions concerning the 6th of January 2021 riot on the Capitol. The skepticism towards Donald Trump extends to the highest levels of the company, according to two people with knowledge of the thinking of Rupert Murdoch, the chairman, and his son, Lachlan Murdoch, the chief executive. It also reflects concerns that Republicans in Washington, like Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, the minority leader in the Senate, have expressed to the Murdochs about the potential harm that Donald Trump could cause to the Republican Party's chances in the upcoming elections, especially its odds of taking control of the Senate. The Murdochs' discomfort with Donald Trump stems from his refusal to accept his election loss, according to two people familiar with those conversations, and is generally in sync with the views of Republicans like Mitch McConnell, who mostly supported the former president, but long ago said the election was settled and condemned Donald Trump's efforts to overturn it. One person familiar with the Murdochs' thinking said they remained insistent that Fox News had made the right call when its decision desk projected that Joseph R. Biden would win Arizona just after 11 p.m. on the night of the election, a move that infuriated Donald Trump and short-circuited his attempt to prematurely declare victory. This person said Lachlan Murdoch had privately described the decision desk call, which came days before other networks concluded that Donald Trump had lost the state of Arizona, as something only that Fox had the courage and science to do. Some of the people acknowledged that Fox's current approach to Mr. Trump could be temporary. If Donald Trump announces he's running for president or he's indicted, he will warrant more coverage, they said. A spokesman for Mitch McConnell declined to comment. A spokesman for the Fox Corporation also declined to comment, as did a spokeswoman for Donald Trump. The relationship between Donald Trump and the Murdoch media empire has long been complicated. An arrangement of mutual convenience and mistrust that has had sensational ups and downs since Donald Trump first talked himself onto the gossip pages of the New York Post in the 1980s. But the spat between the former president and the media baron, who has helped set the Republican Party's agenda for decades, is occurring in a much larger and more fragmented media landscape, as new personalities and platforms make it much harder for any one outlet to change the narrative. Donald Trump's allies in the corners of the conservative media that are more loyal to him, including Breitbart, Newsmax, and talk radio, are already seizing on the turn inside Fox News as evidence of a betrayal. Donald Trump appears willing to fight. He blasted Fox and Friends this week on his social media service, Truth Social, for being terrible and having gone to the dark side after one of his hosts had mentioned that Ron DeSantis had beat Donald Trump in two recent opinion polls of a hypothetical 2024 Republican primary contest. Then, offering no evidence, he blamed Paul Ryan, the former Republican Speaker of the House, with whom he often clashed. Paul Ryan sits on the Fox Corporation's board of directors. The New York Post was often on Mr. Trump's side in its editorials when he was president, but it occasionally went against him, like when Donald Trump refused to concede the election in 2020 and the paper's front page headlines blared, "Mr. President, stop this insanity." Donald Trump found a home on Fox News when the network's founder, Roger Ailes, gave him a weekly slot on Fox and Friends in 2011. Mr. Trump used the platform to connect with the budding Tea Party movement as he thrashed establishment Republicans like Paul Ryan and spread a lie about the authenticity of President Barack Obama's birth certificate. Initially, neither Roger Ailes nor Rupert Murdoch thought of Donald Trump as a serious presidential candidate. Roger Ailes told colleagues at the time that he thought Donald Trump was using his 2016 campaign to get a better deal with NBC, which broadcast The Apprentice, according to Insurgency, this reporter's account of Mr. Trump's rise in the GOP. And when Ivanka Trump told Rupert Murdoch over lunch in 2015 that her father intended to run for president, Rupert Murdoch reportedly did not even look up from his soup, according to The Devil's Bargain by Joshua Green. But as Mr. Trump became bigger than any one news outlet and bigger than even his own political party, he was able to turn the tables and rally his supporters against Fox News or any other outlet he felt was too critical of him. He regularly used Twitter to attack Fox personalities like Megyn Kelly, Charles Krauthammer, and Karl Rove. The network could always be critical of him in its news coverage, but now the skepticism comes through louder. In asides from news anchors, in interviews with voters, or in opinion articles for other Murdoch-owned media properties. Referring to the congressional investigation into the 6th of January attack, the Fox anchor Brett Baier said it had made Donald Trump look horrific by detailing how it had taken 187 minutes for him to be persuaded to say anything publicly about the riot. One recent segment on FoxNews.com featured interviews with Trump supporters who were overwhelmingly unenthusiastic about a possible third campaign, saying that they thought his time has passed and that he was a little too polarizing. Then they offered their thoughts on who should replace Donald Trump on the ticket. Unanimously, they named Ron DeSantis. "I spent 11 years at Fox and I know nothing. Pre-taped hits a Fox screen that hasn't been signed off on and sanctioned at the very top levels of management," said Eric Bolling, a former Fox News host who is now with Newsmax, "especially when it has to do with a presidential election." There can be no denying that Fox News remains Fox News. Viewers in recent weeks have seen occasionally critical coverage of Donald Trump, but unlike other news networks, Fox has chosen to air its own primetime programming rather than the hearings of the committee investigating the January 6 attack on the Capitol. Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, and Laura Ingraham dismissed the hearings as a show trial. "They are lying, and we are not going to help them do it," Tucker Carlson has said. "What we will do instead is to try to tell you the truth." The network has aired the January 6 committee hearings during the day, when far fewer viewers are tuning in. But other segments during the daytime and even evening play up violent crime in Democratic-run cities, or Joe Biden's verbal and physical stumbles. As the government announced that a key indicator of economic health declined last quarter, the headline Fox scrawled across the screen read, "Biden denies recession as U.S. enters recession." On 13th of April this year, Donald Trump called into Sean Hannity's show and ran through a list of crises he claimed would not be happening had we won this election, which we did. He hasn't been interviewed on the Fox News network ever since.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
And every day, every night and every day, never forget to say La ilaha illallah, never forget to say La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith, which has been narrated from Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam regarding the third Imam, Imam Hussein alayhi salam. As you know, today is the commencement of the very solemn and grave and significant month of Muharram, when the doyen of the martyrs, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, was martyred. Today we would like to offer our condolences to our esteemed listeners on the commencement of this most solemn and sad month, and we pray that their mourning for Imam Hussein is accepted by God in this most sacred month. Shu'ayb ibn Abdul Rahman al-Khuza'i, one of the narrators of traditions, has been narrated to have said the following: a mark was seen on Imam Hussein alayhi salam's back on the day of Taf, meaning the day of Ashura. So the people asked Zainul Abidin, they asked Imam Sajjad alayhi salam regarding this mark. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam said the following when the people asked him this question. He said, "This is the mark left by the sacks of food that he," meaning Imam Hussein, "carried on his back to the houses of widows, orphans, and the destitute." As you know, this was one of the most beautiful and one of the most noble of virtues and characteristics of all of our a'imma alayhi salam, beginning from Imam Ali alayhi salam and Imam Hassan, and continued even the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And that is that our infallible leaders, they would themselves personally take, sacks of food, sacks of clothing, you know, things that people needed, to the homes of widows, to the homes of orphans, to the homes of the poor. I mean, they wouldn't even, at the time of the caliphate of Imam Ali, when he was at the height of his worldly power, he could have easily ordered and told his subjects, to carry out this duty. But the Imam personally himself would carry this out and take these wares to these homes of these needy people. And most of the time, the Imams, alayhi salam, they were unknown, and the people to whom they gave these wares to, they were unaware of who was the person giving it to them. So it only became known after the death of the Imam, when the Imam passed away, and these needy people would ask, "Where is that person who used to bring us these wares?" And when they found out that the Imam had passed away, then people would realize that it was the Imam. This is one of the virtues, and this is a virtue that all of us need to cultivate within ourselves: the love for the poor, the love for the destitute, the love for the needy people, and also personally and directly helping these people to the extent that we can. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at Imam Hussein in the words of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.